Unite here. Trump Las Vegas hotel workers had to fight a long battle against Trump to finally get the hotel to stop breaking labor law and bargain a contract there. The Washington Trump hotel workers are members of Unite Here Local 25, which represents 6,500 hotel workers in the District of Columbia.
Sponsored by Iron Workers Impact, now reserving spots for this year's groundbreaking conference, welcoming contractors to grow their business by networking and attending world-class breakouts. More on this event in San Diego, happening March 19th through the 22nd, is found online at impact-net.org under Events.
WIN is brought to you in part by the Amalgamated Transit Union, the largest labor union representing transit and allied workers in the U.S. and Canada. Online at atu.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're tuned to WFHB.
91.3.
And 98.1 FM.
Volunteer-powered.
Listener-supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandewiel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the local daily news for Thursday, February 2nd, 2017.
Is it that difficult to think that there might have been some sort of divine will behind this Big Bang?
The force behind Bloomington's Science on Tap discusses faith and physics later in the show, in today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glenn.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks what Bloomington thinks of the country's new immigration rules. But first, these local headlines.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton responded to President Trump's recent executive order on immigration last night's city council meeting. The executive order included a 120-day moratorium on refugee entry into the United States and an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees. Bloomington was initially expecting to resettle 60 refugees in 2017 after being accepted last year as a resettlement site. The executive order also institutes a travel ban on people coming to the United States from seven predominantly Muslim countries. Hamilton read from a prepared statement.
Whenever the ugliness of discrimination or exclusion becomes an issue in our community, we stand together to reject it. And so today, as mayor of Bloomington, Indiana, I give voice to our community's values when I vigorously condemn and oppose the recent executive orders on immigration issued by the U.S. president.
Hamilton called Trump's immigration order, quote, unwise, shameful, and unconstitutional, end quote. He went on to say that city stands in solidarity with the Indiana University community as well as other mayors and citizens across the country who oppose it.
People from all across the globe hold Bloomington, Indiana, close to their hearts as a place of openness, refuge, and diversity. Our embrace of new residents from all over the world, our culture of celebrating diversity, our Hoosier hospitality, our willingness to stand up for each other whenever injustice threatens, all combine to make Bloomington a place where people choose to live. Here, we cherish those things that make us different. We jealously protect the rights of all to worship, believe, speak, think, and pursue their dreams as they choose, peacefully and respectfully. We do not fear differences. We relish them. We nourish them because we know that they are the path to a stronger future together.
Noting the protests and proactive actions of area residents, Hamilton said the community would not quietly accept the Trump's immigration policy.
We are a community that will not quietly abide this dangerous and divisive public policy being foisted upon us. We will work together to be as effective as we can be in protecting the rights and safety of all who are in Bloomington, protecting our own bright future together, and staying true to our own values.
Hamilton did not discuss any policy changes or other specific efforts from the city government related to the order. He also did not use the phrase sanctuary city during his statement. Many protesters last week called for the city to institute a sanctuary city policy, which could potentially forbid police or municipal employees from asking about a person's immigration status. The city's communication director, Mary Catherine Carmichael, said earlier this week that the administration was investigating how a sanctuary city policy would work.
Later in the meeting, the city council went on to approve a six-year, $300,000 agreement reimbursing a software company for the cost of enlarging its office spaces in Fountain Square Mall. Employees at Envisage Technologies say they expect to double their number of employees during the next 5 years, and they say they need to expand to accommodate that growth. The expansion is estimated to cost $350,000. The city funding would come from the Industrial Development Fund, which is built from taxes paid into the city's Community Revitalization Enhancement District, or CRED. The city's Economic Development Director, Alex Crowley, said the city does not use CRED funds frequently.
We've used it sparingly since its inception. And we think this is a very good use of those funds as they are designed to stimulate economic development, particularly in areas that may be challenged from that perspective.
Crowley said the balance in the account is currently $8.3 million. Envisage contributes about $245,000 to the fund each year. In discussing the Envisage agreement, council members Steve Volan and Dave Rollo expressed concern that so little of the money is being spent. Bolin asked Crowley if the city could build what's called spec business space, which he described as generic office space appealing to a variety of businesses. Crowley said there is a need for that kind of space and said the Trades District and Dimension Mill were a good fit for it. Crowley said the city has recently met with a developer interested in building spec space. Bolin pressed Crowley on the idea of the city using some of the $8 million CRED fund to build more workspace on its own.
A combination of this one and all the previous ones are a drop in the bucket. They're less than 10% of the entire fund. Mm-hmm. And so it begs the question, why aren't we doing more with that fund? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't the city consider using that money to build space, whether in the Trades District or nearby it or somewhere else in the CRED, that would fulfill this function? Does the administration have some other intent for those dollars?
Well, so, I mean, I think the reason why it shouldn't be used for that particular purpose is because, you know, it would seem as though one would do that if we had to, but until it becomes clear that we have to and no one else will, it would seem to be a displacement of private capital and not necessarily the right approach.
Although he passed on last week's straw poll, Volan supported the agreement in last night's council vote. Bolin said there should be more the city can do to build space for companies that are outgrowing their current accommodations but aren't interested in owning their own buildings.
We've done public-private partnerships in this way to build parking garages. Those are nowhere near as productive as workspace for new companies building jobs. So, you know, again, I'm supportive of companies like Envisage, supportive of this project. I'm not supportive of sitting on an $8 million fund when it could be being put to work.
All but one council member voted in support of the measure, giving $300,000 to Envisage Technologies. The sole no vote came from Andy Ruff, who said he wasn't comfortable with the section of the agreement detailing how much money the company would have to repay if it didn't meet its goals.
Local state legislators are split over a bill that could expand syringe exchange programs in Indiana. Indiana House members voted 72-26 on Tuesday to endorse a bill that removes a state approval requirement for counties that want to create needle exchange programs. Representative Matt Pierce and Jeff Ellington, both from Bloomington, supported the bill. Representatives Peggy Mayfield of Martinsville and Jim Lucas of Seymour voted against the bill. House Bill 1438 would repeal the requirement that the state health commissioner must declare a public health emergency prior in a county before it can adopt the needle exchange program. Monroe County is one of nine counties in Indiana that adopted the program in recent years. The community faces a hepatitis C epidemic. The needle exchange program, run by the Indiana Recovery Alliance, aims to reduce the spread of diseases by providing clean needles and knowledge for rehabilitation. Critics of syringe exchange programs say they promote drug use. Until recently, Indiana prohibited such programs. That changed in 2015 when it came to light that Scott County was experiencing the largest HIV outbreak in the United States has seen in decades. House Bill 1438 is intended to allow local groups to act quickly to implement needle exchange programs prior to emergencies. Now that bill has passed the House, it will go to the Senate for a vote.
Starting this week, the United Way of Monroe County and the Financial Stability Alliance for South Central Indiana are leading the free community tax service. The service helps Hoosiers file their taxes at no cost. According to the press release, the free community tax service and volunteers filed more than 300,000 federal and state tax returns last year. The Free Community Tax Service is offering 8 full-service sites, a self-service site, 9 mobile sites, bilingual sites, and online filing at myfreetaxes.com. Services will be held at the Monroe County Library Main and Ellisville branches, Broadville Learning Center, Indiana University Maurer School of Law, Ivy Tech Community College, South Central Community Action Program, the Twin Lakes Recreation Center, and the Owen County Public Library. For more information, residents can call 211 or visit monroeunitedway.org/freetaxes.
Malcolm Dalgleishian's Uwalite Singers will once again present Love Songs for a Lasting World, a benefit concert for Middleway House, on Monday, February 13th at the Buskirk Chumley Theater. The concert begins at 7 p.m. and will feature music, theater, and dance by local artists, followed by a sing-along parade to a bonfire where fresh-baked apple pie will be served. Tickets are available at the Buskirk Chumley box office and by visiting buskirkchumley.org. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV services. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Science has become a controversial topic in today's political discourse. Sean Bueller, a senior studying public health issues at Indiana University, is helping clear the air about scientific topics ranging from the environment to the mind. He's the founder of Science on Tap, a monthly open-to-the-public presentation of issues in the scientific realm at a revolving set of brewpubs in town. Sean combines his training in infectious diseases with a background in the Jesuit faith. He joins Michael Gleb on this week's Big Talk to talk about science on tap, as well as how he reconciles scientific inquiry with his religious beliefs.
This is Big Talk with your host, Michael Gleb, and my guest this week, Sean Bueller, who is the force behind Science on Tap. Thanks for being on with us.
No problem. Happy to be here, Michael.
What is Science on Tap?
Science on Tap is a once monthly science education outreach program run at a local brewery. We've been rotating around a little bit where we take 90 minutes usually to discuss through either a panel or a single person presentation various science topics. So far, we've covered everything from the human mind to astronomy. We covered poisons.
Tuesday, you had on a climate change guest. Who was that?
Yes, sir. We actually had 3 speakers, a panel. In our climate change, we had Professor Dr. Ben Brabson, who's a part of the physics department. We had Dr. Kim Novick, who's with SPIA, and Dr. Richard Phillips, who's with the biology department at IU.
Now, how do you get these people to participate in these things?
I annoy them to death via email. No, so far it's been very easy to recruit speakers. People are very excited to be a part of Science on Tap.
Who comes to hear these things?
We have a very interesting and eclectic mix of IU students, of course, but also Bloomington community members. And we've actually had some graduate students who drive down from Indianapolis each month that heard about the event through mutual friends here on Bloomington's campus. And we have all ages as well. So we are Science on Tap. We have sort of a beer brewery theme, but we keep our events at locations that all ages are welcome.
Uh-huh.
So we've had as young as, I think, maybe even 9, 10 years old, and as old as my grandmother came to one a few months ago, and she's 87.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Are you a scientist yourself, or are you studying to become one?
I want to become a physician. in the future. So you can definitely consider that to be a scientist. And I do research here at Indiana University in infectious disease, looking at what's called biocontainment. Mm-hmm. Basically how to control situations or people where highly infectious disease might be present. So I consider myself a scientist, yes.
Last summer, we were concerned quite a bit with things like the Zika virus. Mm-hmm. Was that the kind of thing that when that was happening, you ate up all the possible information you could get on it?
Absolutely. I have maybe a sick interest in highly infectious disease outbreaks.
You'll pardon the pun.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that I like to see them happen, but when they do happen, I'm very well read on them, reading different treatment plans, how the disease is spreading, trying to learn as much as I can from each event.
You are a young man from Indianapolis, correct?
Yes, sir, just up the road from Bloomington.
Now, you went to Brebeuf Jesuit Preparatory School. Did I say it correctly?
Yes, sir, you did.
Brebeuf is a big deal, I understand.
It's a pretty small school, but we have quite the impact for only having about 800 students.
Is there a special Jesuit tradition of service?
There is. So the motto of Brebeuf and the sort of the motto of the Jesuit order overall, if you will, to become men and women for others.
I saw an interview with you where you told the interviewer that, I'm going to quote you right
now.
No,
that's okay. Let's do it.
We're trying to keep the topics sexy.
Yeah, we can say
What the heck does that mean?
Let's say it. So, yeah. Sexy. Okay. Yeah, I did say that. So I think a certain element of Science on Tap is the appeal, right?
Right.
For example, we try to keep sort of broad topics that are prevalent in the modern, contemporary speech. So this month we're doing climate change.
Climate change, right.
Climate change is always an important topic, right?
Yeah.
But especially in the last, maybe 2 months,
right,
it's become an even much more prevalent issue. So when I mean sexy, I maybe mean more broadly appealing.
At any average session, how many people are going to show up?
We've been averaging about 100 people at each event.
100 people?
100 people at each event, yeah. We're still trying to figure out all of the ins and outs of where we're going to be. We have an ongoing partnership with Quaff On Brewery. They also call themselves Big Woods Bloomington. They are our permanent, warm weather home.
Okay.
They have a beer garden back patio area. They allow us to use that totally free of charge, and they are hugely supportive. One thing I always tell people about Science on Tap, when it's warm outside at least, show up in your shorts and flip-flops, sit down, have a beer, and let's talk about science. And that's what our panel discussions have been. The panelists will just briefly introduce themselves, and then questions start rolling from the audience. And one question will roll into another, and that'll roll into a discussion and into another answer. And it becomes this very organic, beautiful science discussion ranging the entire spectrum of whatever issue we have that day.
This day and age, early 2017, we know what the headlines have been.
Yeah.
Can science ever be divorced from the political?
No, and I don't think it should be. Unfortunately, the beginning of 2017, we have fears with the current administration, mm-hmm, that scientific fact is being watered down or shown to be untrustworthy, which myself as a scientist and someone who believes wholeheartedly in the factuality and the cement nature of science, it's scary, frankly.
Let's go all the way back to first questions.
Okay.
What is science?
I think it's an evidence-based way of looking at the world.
Today, what is the scientist's responsibility?
I think even more so in the last 2 months, since the new administration has taken office, I think a scientist's responsibility to the public is to provide clear and transparent facts and evidence for the decisions that are being made in our world, or contrary to the decisions that are being made in our world. I went to a Catholic high school. Mm-hmm. We talked about that a little bit. And I consider myself a strongly religious person. So I have this intersection between considering myself a scientist and also considering myself a very strong Catholic. And I don't think that those two things need to be separate at all. In 2014, Pope Francis came out and said that this idea of creationism and evolution don't have to be separate, right?
Right.
We don't have to think that God had a magic wand, and sort of I dream of genie, you know, wrinkled his nose and Man and Women popped up in the world.
Right.
The way he talks about it, which I think is beautiful, and frankly, what I probably agree with is, so we know, we can accept that there was a big bang that started everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what is the, you know, is it that difficult to think that there might have been some sort of divine will behind this big bang? Some, you know, something that had an end goal in sight when the big bang happened. And I think that's probably the belief that I mostly most closely adhere to.
So you're a scientist who prays.
Absolutely.
And has faith.
Absolutely.
And you find no contradiction in that.
No, I find no contradiction in that. When I pray, I don't know what I'm praying to. I don't, you know, there's no way to be 100% sure that if I'm praying, something's hearing me.
Yeah.
But that's faith, right? We have to sort of be able to shy away from that doubt and still believe that there's something there. And I think that's what's beautiful about it, to be honest.
The force behind Science on Tap is Sean Buehler. Thanks for being on Big Talk this week.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Gleb at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow the produce that is sold in local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, what do you think about President Trump's executive order to ban travel for citizens from 7 Muslim-majority countries? Last Friday, President Trump issued an executive order that suspends travel for foreign nationals from Syria, Iran, Iraq, Sudan, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen. Entry for visa holders was suspended for 3 months, all refugee admission for 4 months, and refugee admission from Syria was suspended indefinitely. We have gone out into the streets and asked your friends and neighbors what they think about the travel ban.
I think it makes me angry. This is supposed to be, give me your tired, your weak, your poor type thing. I mean, the Syrians wanted to leave Syria because of oppression. They're not even allowed here now. I mean, it's like they must feel rejected.
I think that it's a pleasant change that you get a president that's doing what he said he's going to do, right? Pro or con, he's doing it, right?
I think we have to protect the people of this country first. Vetting is really impossible when their records, you know, they've been bombed out in the war. So you don't know whether who's a criminal or not. And we do need some protection here. We haven't had it for so many years that we don't know what it is anymore.
The U.S. has always been welcoming of immigrants. And I think that if you value life, you value the life of everybody, including Syrian children and their families, and including people of a faith different from one's own.
My family is super, super mixed. My stepmom is Turkish, and my stepdad and stepbrothers are Bosnian. So I'm super against outlawing immigration because I believe, first of all, everyone's an immigrant here. So.
I think it's terrible and it's unconstitutional, and I don't like it one bit, and it's silly.
Well, how many acts of terrorism were committed by refugees from those seven countries in the U.S.? None.
It's being handled inappropriately. Some people might have good intentions for the protection of the nation. I think that it's being handled in a way that's going to alienate a lot of people.
So it's kind of building off the fear and thinking, you know, we can just stop it and make some people feel better, but it follows through on some campaign promises that looks like he's doing something but isn't really doing anything. And like you said, it really harms the image of America as open to helping immigrants and stuff.
We actually came out to the protest. The countries that were banned weren't even the ones that the 9/11 attackers came from. I don't feel like it's going to make us any safer. If anything, it'll make us more of a target. Iran has already decided they're not going to let U.S. citizens there. So it's just, yeah, making us a target and causing a lot of rifts in our foreign policy that's really unnecessary.
I don't think it's sending the right message for the people of our country, representing people that helped build our country too, you know. We're all family as far as I'm concerned.
I think particularly isolating seven countries that don't have anything to do with his business interests compared to other countries with high Muslim populations that he didn't add to the plan, where terrorists have come from, makes his executive order seem not so trustworthy.
I think it's like un-American because that's pretty much against what America stands for. Yeah, because we have so many international students here in particular. I know that we do.
And faculty.
And faculty, yeah,
absolutely.
As well. And
it's fundamentally wrong. I think it's unconstitutional.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jade Schoffel, Kathy Norton, and Carly Van Cleve, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Van Brzozowski. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.